We want a dynamite from the most wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And we are live with Rewind to Dynamite. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting. And everyone, after decades, tonight, TBS was seized by John Moxley. He took hostile control of the superstation. Will the superstation recover? Way. Is this the end of TBS now that it has been placed into the hands of John Moxley?
I don't know why they promoted it like that. I
made this graphic thinking this was going to be the big show long story, that they were going to do something really unique here. They did a promo segment. We might as well have said Jamie Hayter seized the superstation tonight. I couldn't believe this. I appreciate that sometimes AEW, they don't just, hey, this person's going to speak. They come up with some random description. I thought this was overplaying the hand a little bit.
I guess what is a seizing? You know, like is appearing on camera and having the camera not cut away from you. Are you technically seizing the attention of the TBS audience? Is that it?
Carpe diem. That was running through the veins of one John Moxley. I can't tell you. I guess it was enough to be considered a seizure.
Well, yes, I suppose it was seized, and whatever. I think they're just trying to come up with interesting ways of saying, Blank addresses his enemies.
John Moxley kidnaps AEW programming next week.
Sure.
Okay. How are you?
Doing all right. Yeah, not so bad. You know, it's getting really cold. We're hitting 0 degree temperature right now.
It's getting very frigid. Yes. I'm going back to another Raptors game this weekend. And wouldn't you know it, the Toronto Raptors are now...
I don't even know if you've spoken about your first Raptors experience.
I did. It was the show you were not here for. So I
guess
I'm
sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't listen to the.
Wait,
listen to
if
most.
If Wei
of it.
Isn't on this show, he doesn't give an F.
I listen
about
to
what's
most
going
of it,
on.
All right.
Here.
Hey, I listen to the important part of that podcast in full. All right.
As long as the train's leaving the station, Wei is satisfied. Well, I had a tremendous time earlier this month for the Vince Carter retirement of his jersey ceremony. The Raptors, in record fashion, have become the worst team in the NBA, so I'm very excited to see how they continue this slump, as I believe they are down. They're like 2-10, 2-11 now, but it's not looking like a great season for the Raptors. It looks like people are already throwing in the towel this early, but that's kind of Toronto sports in a nutshell for you. We don't want to be the second worst team in the NBA. We want to be the worst in the NBA.
I think it's just that, it could be a case of Gato booking. You start really slow and then just kind of ramp up the victories and get that big comeback towards the end.
I blame the arena. I think it's contagious from our hockey team. I think the Raptors just can't help but acquire some of the motivation and talent that our hockey team tends to possess on a yearly basis. But that's the sporting moment from John Pollock. Coming up this weekend, though, we are going to have Wei Ting will be in the driver's seat with Neil Flanagan. I will listen to that show.
I'm going to test you.
If you want to quiz me on Monday, I'll be all up to date. I always enjoy hearing from the Scarborough, Northern Ireland connection here at Post Wrestling. So that is coming up on Friday. We've got a collision course coming your Wei. WH Park in fine form, dropping a long and winding Royal Road this coming Saturday. And then Sunday, we've got a triple header, historic crossover, UFC 309 and the NWA podcast. Could you plan a better weekend than just putting on your earbuds and keeping it on Post Wrestling all weekend long, bringing you into Monday up to date and just full of joy?
No, you can't. I can't think of a possibly better Wei to spend your existence on this planet than to consume every second of audio content produced by this Pro Wrestling Network, podcasts, There's just no better way to spend your waking hour.
The one way you do not want to spend a waking moment, though, is watching Death Warrior. What you do want to do is hear us talk about having to watch Death Warrior. And that will be the subject of Rewind Away on Thursday as we drag Brandon from New Jersey through this god-awful film from 2009 featuring the who's who of cinema, led by Quentin Wolf Jackson, the Shaman, King Croco, Andre, the Dean of Mean, and the breakout star, Harry Echeverria, I think is his name.
Hector.
Please. Harry.
The Hispanic Tyler Perry.
Who is going to correct me? Yeah, some say the Tyler Perry of the Hispanic market. You be the judge based on our review. Waiting has culled together the lows and lowers of this film with a tremendous thread. Go check him out on our post-wrestling socials.
And go check it out on our Blue Sky.
Pardon?
On Blue Sky. Blue Sky, John. What is Blue Sky? Well, it's the new hot social media platform that seems to be very popular amongst, I guess, former Twitter users at this point.
Yes. As we further fracture the world, everyone is picking their new landing spot, and Blue Sky is it. So do go follow us, and don't spend 90 minutes on this film. Spend about 3 minutes, thanks to Waiting and putting together the sizzle, or I should say the fizzle reel of Death Warrior.
Listen, John, okay? I knew that this would be a bad movie. I mean, you know, like you just kind of look at the description and the box art and like, how could it be not awful? I had no idea how legendarily awful this movie was. So bad that I felt like this was one of our best reviews ever. All right? Like, I mean, I really hate to say it, but really the worst material often makes for the best reviews. And I've described it in the podcast this way. I've described it on our social media this way. This is MMA's version of The Room, down to the awkward nude scenes that come out of nowhere, and a plot that is about as ridiculous, and acting and dialogue that is about as bad as you could imagine. So I don't know, John. I kind of come out of this experience highly recommending it.
You're going to have to kill me for my boy. You're going to have to kill me for my boy.
Dude, if this came out in theaters, like, we'd all be quoting it endlessly.
I wish that this was more well-known, because it would have a soft spot among MMA fans everywhere. Sadly, I don't think anyone watched this then. They are certainly not going to watch it now, which is it's unfortunate.
We'll take a check on the Daily Motion player counter to see if the views go up as a result of our podcast. But yeah, you could watch it on Daily Motion if you choose to sit through all the ads. Otherwise, you can purchase it off of Amazon, I believe, for like $5 on through their digital platform.
Yes, if. If there is one purchase that comes out of the next week, I will fully take complete credit for that, because no one is stumbling upon this and telling themselves, oh, I'm going to check this out. This looks kind of interesting. Why not I drop down my 99 cents? We will do that for you. And, you know, if you so need just a tease of Quentin Rampage Jackson meeting his ultimate demise in his, I would say, just hitting the limit of what a cameo would be considered, although they got all the promotional material they could out of Quentin. This was him meeting his death.
I actually have the video clip, John. Do you want
then
me
let's,
to...
Then let's watch.
Like, I mean, you know, give me a second here to load it, but I mean, this is, I think more important than just what
hearing it is one thing, seeing it is the other, and believe me, your eardrums are going to be glistened with the sounds of 12 stones.
I'm risking the YouTube flagging here. I don't give a shit.
F it. I'm done with all these.
The world needs to experience it with us. Here it is, a scene from the cult, what will be a cult 2009 classic, Death Warrior.
You're a better fighter than me. You have to kill me for my boy.
No!
You have to kill me for my boy. You have to kill me.
Like, why? Why is there blood on the post from a neck snap?
You have to kill me for my boy.
Okay, I did it. That's your protagonist who
murdered
this imprisoned child's father. Oh, a real spoiler. That's really going to interrupt your enjoyment of this film.
Don't worry, there's plenty more where that came from. All right.
Hey, in fairness, that was like 10 minutes into the film they got to that, okay? They're not making you wait around for death by next snap.
Wait till you see how GSP dies.
Oh, GSP, Russell the promoter, Anka is my favorite. Is that her name? The lady for hire? That is the best death in the whole film. Okay. All right, we've talked way more than we need to about Death Warrior. That's coming out Thursday. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6, a bargain, okay, for what we have gone through to provide you this. This is like a $50 review that you're getting in value, okay? So take that inflation. On to the news we go. We start off with a story, and this is just unfortunate because Sandy Parker passed away, and Greg Oliver at Slam Wrestling was able to learn about this. She died all the way back in June of 2022, and this just went unnoticed and unreported. You know, she was the first black women's world champion holding the famous red belt in All Japan Women in 1973, won the Triple WA tag titles 8 times in All Japan Women, was a NWA U.S. Women's Champion and Tag Champion, along with Susan Green, and born in Vancouver and came up in the industry. She was openly gay, and you can imagine, you know, just being a woman and being openly gay at that time of, I'm sure, a ton of the prejudices that she encountered, and being a black woman. I mean, there was a lot of barriers she had to overcome. Her real name was Cassandra Jolene Parker, and there's a story up at Slam Wrestling, and we will definitely get something up on the site this week. It's just unfortunate that this is one of those stories where passed away, and she was, I believe, in like an assisted living home, and she had a friend of hers that was trying to contact her, and it was just a struggle just to get a hold of her, and then I guess she passed, and there wasn't like that word just didn't trickle into the wrestling space. But she was 77 years of age and had been honored about 20 years ago at Cauliflower Alley Club. And you might remember that a number of years ago when the WWE was doing their legacy wing, I believe it was Ethel Johnson that was being honored. I'm perhaps misremembering, but the point was they had the wrong image of her showing, and they showed Sandy Parker by mistake, mistaking her with the woman they were honoring. And that was, I think, 2021 that occurred. So that was, a case of like mistaken identity. But the last time that she was kind of prominently noted by people was back in 2021 when there was this hiccup during the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony. But there you have it. Rest in peace. It's unfortunate that this kind of just went unreported 2 years ago. Conor McGregor took the stand today in his civil case, and he denied all the allegations made by the victim, and he denies that any of the bruising, because there was a physician that testified last week to the bruising and marks that the woman had on her when she was checked out afterwards. And he denies that any of that came from him. Does admit to, he said they had consensual sex and never grabbed her by the neck. There was no biting. And he said that she is full of lies. Everything is a lie. So Conor McGregor adamantly is denying this, and the civil case continues in Dublin. They had initially stated it would take about 2 weeks, so it could be wrapping up fairly soon. But, she testified multiple times last week, and today was McGregor's first day on the stand. WWE is putting tickets on sale. The pre-sale has begun, but the public on sale is coming up this Friday for the Royal Rumble, and they had John Cena put out a video confirming he will be competing at the Royal Rumble at Lucas Oil Stadium on February the 1st, John Cena's final Royal Rumble, and so making no nothing vague about the fact John Cena will be on this card, not stating for sure like where he will be placed on this card. You could see him being in the Rumble. That would make a lot of sense for him. But yeah, this is the, I guess, big kickoff to the farewell year way for John Cena. And I guess we'll get a pretty good indication of, you know, in the Rumble and where he's going to be slated for WrestleMania and where you go in that direction. I mean, do you see Mania as a potential, like if you're going to do this challenging for the WWE title record that they promote, like is WrestleMania the time to do it? Or is that something you maybe hold off on until later?
I think you could do both. I think that certainly the momentum of this year should culminate in some form of, you know, title challenge at some point. You know, he should be building up towards trying to finally eclipse that record, or at least, sorry, match that record. And I don't necessarily think it needs to be stuck to one particular opportunity. I think Cena wrestling at his last WrestleMania, whether or not with the championship is going to be big, but I think it becomes that much bigger when it's the championship involved. And when you look at the you know, who the champions are that are available, if Gunther continues to hold the championship, a Gunther versus Cena match for a WrestleMania is huge. It's massive. You know, if the man is available and this is the only opportunity you'll be able to do it, I would consider that. I would absolutely consider Cena winning the Rumble and going on to challenge for the, you know, a Gunther or something.
If you can't have The Rock at WrestleMania, and we don't know 100% what the status is going to be, if Rock is out of the picture for WrestleMania, is Cody and Cena does that become a more viable match? You could argue that is the biggest match you could do. If you're going to do Cena going for the title, that's a big one with Cody. Like, would that be the second biggest match you could do with Cody if Rock is unavailable?
Yes it would be. Yeah. Because beyond The Rock, like, what are Cody's options at the moment?
I don't see them doing another Roman match.
I think Orton will probably take place before that, and I mean, as big as it is, I don't think it's big enough for WrestleMania, or at least not as big as a Cena Cody match would be.
Cody Punk doesn't seem like the timing is there for that one.
Possible too.
And then you're looking at other options, like, you know, pick your heel, whether it's a Drew McIntyre or someone. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Cena becomes a really attractive option at that point. If, like, you've shot the angle with Rock, but that's going to be done on Dwayne's timetable when he is available. If it's WrestleMania, great. If it's not WrestleMania, it becomes something else you aim for.
Yeah. Now, let's say The Rock is available. I mean, you still have The Rock versus Roman option that's out there that you could pivot to, just like you attempted to pivot a match, you know, earlier this year. Do you want to be in the position, though, where you are like you have Rock and Cena in potentially main event matches of both nights? Is that too much digging into the past?
The margins way, the expenses would be increased, you would think, and you have to be looking at your CapEx being impacted, and you've got to create a moat of stability for shareholders.
Hmm. There are people who might be listening to this podcast for the very first time who just completely have no idea why you just started talking like that.
Well, then you got to do your research and right, get up to speed. No, I don't think it's overkill. I think you're going to have all the star power you can muster for these two nights. And again, it's having all of these people available during those first couple of months on Netflix and really just promoting the hell out of this brand on the largest platform they've ever had for weekly exposure. And if you can have Rock and Cena available, I don't think they're going to space those out, because we know Cena's going to be doing his, whether it's wrestling on every pay-per-view, I don't think anyone expects that, but he's going to be a presence throughout the year in and out. Yeah. You might as well. And Dwayne, it's just, you don't get to pick and choose with Dwayne. It's, hey, I've got this availability, you've got to jump on it, because you're not going to be able to say, we're good, Dwayne. We're set for Mania. I mean, it's,
we know the man likes to show up late and you know, doesn't have time to use a proper bathroom even. So he is very low on time, it seems. Yeah.
That could be an angle in the lead up. Maybe Cody's gonna You know, or I, who was it they did that with? Was it Sheamus and Jeff Hardy? They did the piss bottle with.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, Lance Storm did it with Tommy Dreamer. I mean, wrestling has a rich history of urine based storylines.
There's a top 10 for WWE's YouTube. You know, top 10 urine angles.
Urine for a treat. WWE history. The countdown. NXT is going back on the road next month, December 17th. They'll be in Lowell, Massachusetts. So this is about, I believe, like a 2,500 or so seater. Like, this should not be a challenge to fill this one. Do you think this is one of those shows where, I mean, it's not the size of an Allstate Arena, for instance. Is this one where you maybe test out just what does our talent draw? And, like, where do you get to a point where you are not so reliant on like a main roster spike for going on the road or for certain weeks? I mean, is that something that, hey, if we need a boost, we've got it, but we also want to be able to see for some of these shows, like can our talent go out and draw 2,500, 3,000 people? That's not a pay-per-view.
Okay.
Do you think they can do that, first of all, for a TV?
On a Mania weekend, yeah. When it's not attached.
But for an individual Tuesday night show, because like the PLEs, we know they can put that in, especially if you're piggybacking. But for an event like this, like, do you feel the roster, if this becomes a once a month, once every other month kind of thing, you can do this with just your NXT roster?
2,500, you said?
I think that's around what Lowell can hold based on configuration.
I think they could achieve it. You know, if we're talking about level of buzz, I mean, that's what AEW does, and NXT drew more viewers than AEW. I mean, if that's any sort of like, you know, basis of comparison, then maybe the current NXT roster is. I mean, that was a special edition of NXT. Maybe they can bring on NXT ACW alumni to fill this one out.
You know what? You know what you do for this week? It's like, okay, let's really test things. Karrion Kross, former NXT champion.
Just bring out like the lowest level guys on the main roster to see if they make.
Yeah, alumni, Karrion Kross and AOP.
Okay,
they come back one night only.
My bigger question, John, is it's not cheating to like bring a main roster guy. Like, what exactly are you gaining by proving that? Hey, like we don't need main roster guys on. They have access to everybody. You know, it's I don't necessarily think it's like a foul or like, you know, some particular handicap that they're that they need to give themselves.
I'm not saying that. I'm more so saying like it's almost like a test of the brand, that it's something like there is growth that NXT has exhibited, and I'm just arguing that I think there's a certain point where it's like a certain level, and mm-hmm. this is designed to be a developmental brand, but also one where I think you want to see like what can this brand draw.
So don't you think that what is it, was the St. Louis show was the original on sale for that one was enough of a test to show you what their limit was?
Yeah, that's it's a good point. They had to scale that one back to significantly, and that was with Randy Orton. That was with Randy Orton. So I mean, that was even with the hometown guy appearing and wrestling on the show, and they had to move it to the smaller arena. But we'll see. Lowell is usually a reliable market for them. Raw ratings from Monday. They were up against a Monday Night Football game, but it was the least watched Monday Night Football game of the season. So the NFL, maybe it's going to get canceled. We had 1,564,000 viewers watching Raw and a 0.49 in the demo, ranked third behind the football game and the Monday Night Kickoff. So basically they were second behind the NFL. The NFL game did just over 12 million viewers, and Raw was up 7% with the 18 to 49 demo growing 2% this week. The first hour of Raw was the most watched hour of the show since September 16th. So of all the 2 hour shows, hour one of this past Monday was the most watched. And in Canada, doing 235,100 viewers and 133K in the 25 to 54 demo, most watched in Canada since October the 7th. So football was down, Raw was up, and it was a very well performing first hour in particular.
What was on the first hour? I forget.
Not the kidnapping resolution. So shame on you if you tuned out for hour two.
Okay.
NXT on Tuesday did a good number. They did 631,000 viewers and a 0.16 in the demo, down 6% from last week's show, but that was the Wednesday night episode. So back to their normal night. They were against an NBA game, college basketball with Duke and Kentucky, and Dancing with the Stars. That is always going to take a big chunk out of you. They did 101,000 viewers in Canada, which is a very good number by NXT standards. So there you have it. That is all of your ratings information that you can now take for your utilization in all your online discussions. Want to make mention that on the Post Wrestling site, Andrew Thompson has a great interview up with Shuri going into this weekend's historic Crossover 2 event. You can check that out from the great Andrew Thompson. And coming Thursday to the site, Jack Wannan traveled to Winnipeg last month for the Winnipeg Pro Wrestling card at the Burt Cummins Theater. And this was the independent show that Winnipeg Pro Wrestling, they have been on a bit of a roll, and they sold over 1,200 tickets to this show in Winnipeg. So Jack was there. He spoke with the promoters. He spoke to some of the fans and is going to give a story on kind of what led to this success, what is working so well with Winnipeg Pro Wrestling that you can do over 1,200 people for an independent event in Winnipeg. So an interesting piece that we will have coming up on Thursday. And as we mentioned, a lot of shows coming up over the next couple of days, including Rewind Away dropping on Thursday, the Death Warrior edition that might be the death of myself and waiting by the end of this review that you can look forward to. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you two editions of Rewind Away, starting off with a film review of Death Warrior. As described, the 2009 classic features five of the best mixed martial arts champions from around the world forced to play a deadly game. Plus, we tackle TNA's Turning Point from 2009. Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord will be covering the historic Crossover 2 event, plus an Ask Away mailbag show, Rewind to SmackDown, and Collision Course. $6 a month gets you access to the Post Wrestling Cafe. On to Dynamite tonight, Way, from Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Boy. I mean,
they're like 20 minutes apart.
Okay? Yeah, like, is it that big of a sin? Come on.
This isn't even like a Toronto-Hamilton thing. It's like, this would be like a Toronto-North York thing. I mean, but man, did this crowd, this is a patriotic Bridgeport-only crowd that pretty much hijacked the segment with the Hurt Syndicate.
26 minutes, listen. Next time they do a show, maybe if they do a show in Stamford, I mean, I guess Swerve would be the biggest babyface on the show.
I think it was the double whammy that you had, you know, technically the wrong city, and Stamford is just naturally going to get a heel reaction, I think, from a non-WWE crowd.
I suppose so. Now, listen, it is 26 minutes on the freeway, okay? Mm. So maybe that's enough of a distance for people to get angry about.
What is the time that it's acceptable to like intertwine cities into the same thing?
I think it depends on your mailing address.
How did you and your friends growing up feel about like Markham if they described that?
If they called Scarborough Markham?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not right at all. It's not even technically the same city. But yeah, I would be pissed off.
Well, this is not the same city.
You're right. I would be pissed off then. Like, okay. Do they even have the same government? Municipal government? If they don't, then I think that they have cause for
it. I'm sure there's the representatives in Bridgeport. And I would imagine that there's quite a heated rivalry between Bridgeport and Stamford. And I think your aversion to my comparison to Markham, I think, says everything about these 2,700 people. Like, go to hell.
I totally understand that.
I was greatly entertained by it. So I found it really entertaining that these fans just took it upon themselves to pretty much just take over this segment with Bridgeport. So we had just over 2,700 fans by last check from Russell Tix, and we're getting right into Christian Cage and Hangman Page against Jay White and Juice Robinson. Interesting pairing of Christian and Hangman Page, kind of a loose alliance coming out of this. And of course, this is building to the Hangman Jay White rematch at Full Gear. That, man, I'm not saying this as like a negative at all, but they promoted this pay-per-view so hard. And the amount of times they hammered home the date and where you can buy this on pay-per-view, like it was constant. YouTube, PPV.com, Triller, like they were hitting you so hard over the head for this Full Gear show, and that's kind of what you, I think, need to be doing. Like, they were drumming it into you.
I didn't find it annoying, really. Like, I don't think
it was just
any...
more than often. Like, I don't recall like it being as noticeable. Like, this was the hard sell of the pay per view, and it just seems like something that they're taking more of a proactive approach to, is like hitting you really hard with the info.
Yeah, I really don't think there's harm in, you know, overemphasizing the thing that you're trying to sell, you know, and get people to pay money for, right? Like, it's just good practice. It's just good business. And in fact, like, something that I think we've often maybe criticized them for. So postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 a month gets you through the door and gets you access to all of these shows that you see here.
Rewind away, November 14th, the 14th of November. You can check the QR code and go listen at postwrestlingcafe.com. Apple subscribers, it helps us out a lot more because YouTube sucks us dry.
Ooh, that's right, yeah. No, actually, it's kind of the opposite.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, if you... Anyway, that's for another
that's
time.
That's your domain.
Yeah.
I do what Way informs me of.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to this big tag match. So Juice is sent to the floor as Nick Wayne gets involved, and then Hook shows up and drags Nick Wayne, and we never see Nick Wayne again. So as far as I'm concerned, he's dead.
He's with the Paul Ellerings of the wrestling world. Yeah.
Okay.
Rest in peace.
Juice then captures Cage with an inverted neckbreaker on the floor, and White then snaps Page's knee in the corner, Juice hits him with a cannonball, there's a brainbuster by Jay, and then the left hand of God is delivered to Cage on the floor. Page goes after the eyes of White and then hits a follow-away slam off the buckle. Blade Runner can't be completed, and we get a buckshot ducked into a flatliner by White, and Cage is taken out with a Blade Runner into the barricade as Juice is left with Page. The Juice is loose, gets countered. There's a roll-up. Mother Wayne distracts the referee, so the count cannot be executed. So Juice goes after Kip Sabian and gets hit in the head with the contract and leads to the dead eye. Hangman pins Juice in 11 minutes and 34 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just a bit of heat building for the heels. I thought the match was good. I thought Juice and Jay were really exciting to watch in this match as babyfaces. And I thought all four interacted like pretty well in the run-up towards the finish. I'm expecting this to be a one-time tag team between Paige and Cage. And I don't know if I need to see this team reunite, because I really do think like Hangman is a stronger character at this point by himself as the loner. He also carries a much more serious tone of threat than I think Christian Cage does, who, you know, Christian, he's threatening, but threatening in the way that kind of makes you laugh, whereas Page should be threatening in a way that makes you threatened.
Well, they did show them kind of leaving together, and you had Hangman kind of giving him a look. I mean, I think there's a natural pairing here as the fathers.
I guess so. I don't know if I'd love that at all. Yeah. Maybe they could bring Will Ospreay in there. A lot of fathers in AEW right now.
Well, they can all get together. Renee did her first of a dozen interviews with Mercedes Moné and Camille, who was in a sling. Either an injury or selling the effects of last week's memorable hit and run.
She hurt herself because of...
No, she wasn't in a car accident. She didn't crash a car.
Right. Okay. All right. So she ended up getting hurt. Yes, I do remember. I just didn't know she suffered that big of an injury, but okay.
Well, Mercedes cuts off Renee from asking a question, and Renee accuses her of trying to run Statlander over, but Moné throws Camille under the car and blames her for not knowing how to drive. And Mercedes proclaims, "I am not afraid of Statlander," who then appears in the background and goes after the two of them, culminating in Statlander tackling both Moné and Camille through the drywall. And the Big Show, Kane, and Raven were very proud as we cut to the arena and just continued. Three more casualties on this show joining Nick Wayne.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I often feel like these blast through the wall. I think they look ridiculous because I don't know
what's never happened to you.
Well, I just don't know what sort of room is insulated by like one thin piece of drywall that leads right into a hallway. But I thought this one worked
I'll tell you what, the Total Mortgage Arena, that probably is going to see a big deductible coming out of this damage.
Oh, that's right, man. But I thought this one worked better than most because this just like this took place in a hallway. So like because of the tight angles, you couldn't really kind of see the seams of the wall. So it creates for like a nice little surprising reaction, I should say.
I wanted the extended shot. Like, what does Renee do after seeing this? Does she just have to, okay, I got to get to my next interview.
She's a busy woman. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure she's on a schedule.
Does anyone come to tend to these three? Are they moving? Does Camille have a second sling on the other arm now?
You know the type of shit Renee has seen in her career, okay, over the past, I don't know, decade? On and off camera? This doesn't faze her.
This is nothing.
It's just a wall.
Shivani brings out Will Ospreay. Boy, did the announcers struggle with Konosuke Takeshita tonight multiple times. I don't know how Tony pronounced it. It was like, I can't even remember what he said. It was a far cry from Konosuke Takeshita. But Ospreay, it was so weird. The setup was all about Takeshita, and Ospreay just blew it off. He's like, yeah, I'm not really interested in the international title right now. I'm dealing with Kyle Fletcher. It was just a very bizarre. I'm doing nothing with Takeshita. I'm not booked with him. So he calls out Fletcher, who comes out and calls Will a coward and states that if you lay a hand on me, then you're going to be taken out. And Ospreay knows the Don Callis family's planning. So he says, he basically calls on the run-ins. Like, why don't we just bring them all out now? And all Kyle has is a screwdriver. So he tosses it at Will. And Ospreay says that
And this screwdriver, like, lands. Well, Will tosses it out of the ring. And it lands, like, perfectly piercing this mat around the ring. So really nice toss. Yeah.
Kyle is informed by Will that you used to be my brother. You lived in my house. You joined the United Empire. I even opened a door for you here. But then he tells us an even deeper secret. You came to pick up my son at his school. And this frightens me and my missus. I want answers. Fletcher says that Callis opened his eyes to the truth. And I did those things for myself. You did all of those things for yourself to keep me under your wing, in order to make me a clone of you, and therefore you could control me so that I couldn't outdo you. And it's just like what you did to Okada and Omega, you hypocrite. So Ospreay says, well, bruv, you just did the exact same thing as me. Are you a clone or not? Well, great response. He left Kyle without any explanation on that one. But he admits, yes, I stabbed Okada and Omega in the back. But when I had done that, I'd won the junior heavyweight title. I'd won the best of the super juniors. What have you done, Kyle? And then he quickly covers, what have you done without Mark Davis or the United Empire? And Kyle just says, it's not about what I've done. It's about what I'm going to do. And I'm going to surpass you. And I will prove it at Full Gear. And challenges Will, who calls himself Mr. Pay-Per-View. The last four champions can't match what I do on pay-per-view. And he accepts the match. But then he gives us a heartfelt story of sitting at home, watching Kyle shaving his head, as father and sons are want to do. And his son, his six-year-old son, held Will's hand, but because of the Tiger Driver, Will could not even feel his hand. And that is what you have taken away from me. That's what you have taken away from my son. And I'm going to put a carrot in front of you at Full Gear and then take it away from you. But Kyle says, I'm not coming for a piece. I'm coming for everything at Full Gear. And then Archer and Cage come in, and we get into a big brawl as Hobbs and Mark Davis, the best-dressed man in the mirror that Mark Davis occupies. And we get in, and there's nothing like fighting words than Will. So are we standing around with our dicks in our hands, or are we going to fight? And they fought instead of holding their dicks in their hands for an awkward amount of time, which would have been a hell of an end to this segment. And Fletcher holds up going to strike Mark Davis. He can't pull the trigger on Mark Davis. So a lengthy segment here. But what did you think of the performances of Will and his former clone?
I thought it was a great segment, John. I think Will Ospreay continues to impress me with how good of a promo he is. This was, I think, one of the better face-to-face segments we've had in AEW in quite a long time. To me, like, you know, we're in November now. Will Ospreay is certainly, as he usually is, one of the leading contenders for Wrestler of the Year. I think I would nominate Will Ospreay's six-year-old son as Best Supporting Wrestler for the year, because I think Will Ospreay...
We haven't even seen him.
Well, listen, John, Will Ospreay has made such great use of the motivation and vulnerability that comes with having a child that it, throughout this AEW run, that I think I would automatically give it to him without even seeing him, okay? Here he explains that Fletcher was close enough to know where his son goes to school, and it just escalates this feud to beyond just, I think, the confines of work now. This is a very personal feud that has now scared this man's wife. He, I thought, also in this segment did a great job of selling the effects of the Tiger Driver. Again, using his son by saying that I couldn't feel my son's hand because of your wrestling moves. So this man's son is definitely already like a shoe-in for a future career in a feud with Kyle Fletcher. I thought like it provided great pro wrestling motivation for Will Ospreay, and the fact that these words are coming from somebody who's also like one of the very best wrestlers in the entire world, I think he just continues to show just how complete of a wrestler he is.
Who are the nominees for Best Supporting Child in a Wrestling Context this year?
Who are the nominees?
Okay, if you're nominating Will Ospreay's child with Alex Windsor, that's a child who is, I do feel a qualification should be one appearance on it, but let's include, we have Bryan Danielson's children at All In.
Verdi has played a major role in this retirement storyline. Yeah, okay,
that is true. We have
Gable's daughter.
I was going to say Chad Gable's daughter, I think, is still the front runner. Yeah. And we are going to add Jackie from Death Warrior.
Jackie, poor Jackie. What a tragedy that is. Quentin Jackson's orphan
still
child.
Think Quentin has just gone off to work for the day. No idea what's happened.
I guess I would say Chad Gable's daughter at this point. But the year's still
I'm
young.
Sure we're missing somebody. Children are typically pretty good. Sami Zayn's kid at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, Brian's suggesting Hangman's infant, although that was more 2023. So,
yeah, and again, not really an appearance. It was like, I
don't have
think...
to appear. Okay, like how?
Well, what did the child do? Like, what are we basing?
The child
this on?
Was threatened. Like all these children were threatened. That's all
okay,
the children
they have
to do.
To do something though. They have to do something to warrant this.
He provided motivation for the at that point, Hangman Page, the hero of the story.
Well, I'm just saying, like Chad Gable's daughter, had Chad Gable come out the next week and said, "My daughter was at home crying," I don't think that has the weight of seeing her in the
legitimately
crowd.
Good nominee here. Kyle Johnson says, "Godo's kids from the family match this year."
Oh, man.
Yes.
That's probably... They were phenomenal.
They're great.
Yeah. You know what? Godo's kids might have this
does Sting's,
up.
Sting's son... Like, do his sons count? Like,
they're
do you have to be older?
Yeah. They're well, technically kids. They are the children, but...
They were attacked.
Okay. Yeah, but they fine involvement, but I wouldn't say that they this is high stakes that we're talking about this competition.
You have to be
100% no, Evan. No.
No to Shane McMahon, Evan. Thank you for the suggestion, though. I think there's a cutoff at they have to be a minor. Okay, you have to be under the age of 18. Is that even too old? Like you have to be under the age of like 10, even.
Perhaps, yeah. So okay. Borden's kids would be a. I mean, Shane was born in 1970, so I think we have a reasonable cutoff.
All right.
On to our next segment, Lance Archer against Roderick Strong. This was sort of, we just went from one segment to the next because Archer is out for this whole brawl, and then Roderick's music plays, and Lance goes to the front, and Roderick appears with a kendo stick and drills him from behind, and we get right into the Falls Count Anywhere match as Roderick Strong going for his third win to get the match with MJF at Full Gear. And they make their way to the back, and it is pitch dark. And Roderick takes the closest thing to a phantom chokeslam, only it was a choke slam through a table that it was impossible to see. They finally got some lights on here. And then we have Brian Cage getting involved, and they fight into the crowd when Taven and Bennett show up, and Archer tries to choke slam Taven off the barricade. Security is there to catch Taven and save his life, but Strong uses a chair to Lance his head and then leaps over the barricade with a flying knee to pin Lance Archer in 6 minutes and 39 seconds.
Kind of forgettable match, you know, maybe most of it because I couldn't really see in the back.
It was a dark match.
But I like in terms of content, I'm not exactly sure why there's a false count anywhere stipulation. I'm sure they explained it somewhere. I must have just missed it. But overall, I just kind of found it pretty forgettable with the stipulation not necessarily adding much other than some variety to the show. But it just kind of gets us to the story. I didn't think it made Roddy that much hotter of a competitor in any way.
I like the flying knee to end the match. It was short, but yeah, we do need to light our backstage area if we're going to be doing choke slams through tables. MJF is seen watching at home, and he's just taking this all in. As Roderick gets onto the mic, he's going to finish MJF at full gear, and with that, he gets jumped by Takeshita. So Adam Cole makes his entrance, and we got New Jack Adam Cole here as his music plays over the speaker because we've got to get to the boom, and we did. And this was an uncomfortable amount of time that this music continued during this this match.
Hey, I thought it was pretty cool. Like him wrestling only in time to break for, like, he had to take care of Takeshita before the music hit where he had to point to himself. Okay, I think that's pretty damn cool.
What if he was fighting for his life? And he was waiting for.
I mean, you still do it, John. Okay. To be honest, though, like, I mean, we're battling 2 weeks now where we've heard Adam Cole negative reaction. I mean, the first week, and then like that was a total Buddy Matthews crowd. Second week, not as loud, but we did hear boos. This was enough to call attention to just like Adam Cole having issues getting over as a babyface. I think doing like unique fan friendly stuff like fighting through music only to do your pose is the type of thing he kind of needs.
So we go into the match. It officially begins, and a Panama Sunrise early on is prevented by a forearm smash. And then Cole lands a super kick to finally stop the offense. And this super kick came at a very opportune time because Shivani had been put on the spot by Nigel McGuinness to define what a metaphor is. And Tony was struggling. And then we got to just segue over to this super kick. Takeshita hit a blue thunderbomb, and then Cole lands with the enziguri. But Takeshita ducks the boom and lands a big rolling elbow. Another Panama Sunrise gets countered into the bastard driver, then to a wheelbarrow suplex and a huge lariat. The crowd is getting into this a lot. And after Cole avoids the power drive knee, he hits the Panama Sunrise, hits the boom, goes for the boom, but Takeshita rolls to the floor and he puts on the dynamite diamond ring that, of course, the referee does not see and nails Cole from the floor. And Takeshita rolls in. And he's going slowly on top of Adam Cole, and you're expecting the kick out at 2 3/4. It's 1, 2, and 3. Takeshita pins Adam Cole at 9:38, ending Adam Cole's involvement at full gear as MJF laughs at home as you are given MJF versus Roderick Strong in this program's current incarnation for November 23rd.
Right. Okay, so there's still 10 days. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Certainly unexpected.
You were all concerned about Adam Cole getting booed at full gear. Problem solved.
Problem solved, yeah. I mean, I tend to enjoy it.
Now it's going to be Roderick Strong getting booed.
Yeah, he certainly
which I think is
cheered.
A very likely outcome here. I think MJF is going to be a huge babyface on this show. After you were discussing this last week, I gave it more thought. I was like, this guy's returning. He's. Yeah. I don't care what work they do. I think they're going to have to at least fight this crowd because he's going to be one of the big stars on the show, and you're doing a return.
Well, I suspect the story isn't over and that they're going to find some way to involve Adam Cole, whether it be in the lead up to the pay-per-view or on the night of the pay-per-view itself. And maybe whatever they do in the last chapter of this story in the lead up to Full Gear might be enough to turn the tides on these crowds. But it's
World's
going to
End,
be
the anniversary of the devil being revealed.
Oh, maybe. Sure. Yeah. But I suspect even for Full Gear, I don't think that's just the match that we're going to get. Nonetheless, like this is.
Now, what was the purpose of beating him here?
we'll find out, John. I don't know.
If they just put him into this match, I'm sorry. That's just it's kind of
well. I it wouldn't be that simple. I don't think. I think it would require something else. But we shall see. You know, there's still 10 days to go. I only say that because I think Roderick Strong is such a weak challenger that it really does not feel like it's a pay per view level match at all. So I the story is so centered around Cole that I think he will eventually find his way somehow, you know, involved in all of it. So, you know, we were wondering how they were going to book Takeshita out of this match because Takeshita is somebody that they've been protecting and made to look really strong. And they found a way.
So with that, MJF is howling at this outcome. And Strong runs down, attacking Takeshita, but then gets kicked in the balls and Takeshita puts the ring back on, and Kyle O'Reilly comes out to assist his former friends. And there is Adam Cole offering the hand. But Kyle O'Reilly, he's not willing to go back, even though it feels special. Even though for a moment, like Sami Zayn, he could feel that future shock going through his veins. But he walks off, and there is Takeshita at the entrance when Ricochet walks out and casually super kicks him and grabs the international belt as O'Reilly helps Roderick he rebuffs the handshake. So looks to be Ricochet and Takeshita. And at the end of this, we will go over this card for Full Gear, but it is shaping up to be an insane show.
As usual, you know, these Dynamites, I think, are pretty stacked, but they happen so fast that we don't always have time to fully
even by AEW
it.
Standards, like this is looking to be like an unbelievable show, and like they haven't even officially added Ricochet and Takeshita to this lineup. Like it's a pretty stacked card for the 23rd, November 23rd. Truck backs up. Whoever was driving in reverse here, I believe it was Moxley. I mean, beautiful alignment here, and the Death Riders come out to seize the Superstation after the break. But first, it's Renee with the Hurt Syndicate, and MVP hijacks the microphone to interview Bobby Lashley after questioning her journalism. And Lashley says he will hurt Swerve and make an example out of him, and they will be watching his match later tonight. We cut to the front of the arena, and Yuta and Claudio have destroyed JD Drake, of all people, who's just beaten down with a chair. And that was JD Drake's involvement, and this is a prelude to Moxley making his grand entrance. And Moxley cuts a promo of what he's done already to Chuck Taylor, who now has to eat food through a straw because Orange couldn't save him, and says that Orange has a shot of a lifetime at Full Gear, but the pressure is building. He's going to make an example out of Cassidy, and he is going to mutilate him. I would take this as a grand threat, but I also thought he was going to seize this entire network. So that could just mean that he's going to clothesline him. And he is going to see, he said, that everyone will run and hide after they see what I do to you. We have the power. We command the championship. So out comes Orange Cassidy, followed by Mark Briscoe and Rocky Romero. And he believes, Moxley, that you can do all the things you say you do. And you hold the title that represents all of us and everything that wrestling can be. You have the power. But we settle this by wrestling, and no one wrestles more than me. And I'm pretty good at it. I even beat you, which I was so glad they finally brought this all out outcome from last year up, because I think you should be leaning on your history. And when we're going back over a year, you should be refreshing people's memories. So he states that they are going to get the power back, and that you once told me that you're playing chess and the rest are playing checkers. Well, there's still some pawns I need to get rid of, starting with Wheeler Yuta next week, and I'm going to remove the pawn that lets me take out the king. Ooh. I thought this was a great promo from both Jon Moxley and Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. So Moxley beat Cassidy at All Out. And
when was the one where he beat Moxley? Was that the...
That was September. Okay, he beat him Full Gear.
Oh, it was Full Gear last year. Oh, right. They did the... He lost at the end. That was the main event, I think, of All Out. And then they came back.
He won the title back from Moxley, the international title. So, I mean, this is essentially a rubber match. And, like, yeah, it's still a valid line. I think Moxley brings such intensity to all of his programs. And I think in this segment, they did a good job explaining the value of the championship to this overall storyline. I wish... they could go a little bit further and be a little bit more specific about why holding a championship provides Moxley with what he's been able to enjoy, which I mean, as far as we know, is just like a series of beatdowns that, you know, he's just allowed to do. But like, really, anybody's allowed to beat up other people on these shows. I mean, somebody tried
not,
to
not
run
everyone. Not everyone gets physicality.
Yeah, Camille tried to run over, like, you know, Statlander with a car. Like, I guess she's a TBS champion. So champions can try to kill people on the show and not go to jail. Is that it? Is that what we're establishing?
They have no cut contracts.
Okay. But I do think it needs to be at least like entertained, you know, like some semblance of reason to for me to understand why Cassidy winning the championship from Moxley will somehow put an end to all of this. Why exactly does John Moxley and why did the Death Riders need the championship to execute this plan?
I think enough people, it's, you know, it is the top championship, and with it, you become the most valuable person in, you're untouchable.
Is that true?
That's the story they're telling.
This title but is it enough for us to believe it? You know, is the champion, whoever's holding the championship, always the top guy in a company?
I mean, that was sort of the whole premise of like the NWO angle was like Hogan had the command of the championship.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all I'm saying is it
it's
enough
like having the presidency, the Senate, and the House?
Is it enough to immerse me into this reasoning that they're trying to, you know, give me for why holding the championship is so important?
I guess not for you. It's not a hang up for me. I think people understand. Like everyone is like this is John Moxley's. This is his oxygen. It's this championship. Take it away from him, and he does not have this same level of influence to wreak havoc over the entire company without, because he'll be fired without it. He can't seize a network without a championship. So the segment ended with the BCC, or the Death Riders, taking off after this brawl, and Moxley tells him to abandon all hope, and then as they're making their way out of the arena, Darby leaps off a balcony onto the Death Riders, and then Shafir is like the Secret Service agent that is taking the president to safety as she shields him from potential open fire. And we cut to the outside the arena where Moxley, Shafir, and Claudio make their way to the Death Rider mobile, and Darby leaps into the back of the truck, and Claudio gets out and proceeds to swing Darby into the garage door, and they're on multiple occasions ready to leave Yuta behind, but Yuta does hop in at the end as Darby yells that he is still standing, and Darby and Claudio will take place on Dynamite next Wednesday.
Brutal looking big swing into the fence. Awesome. Like the most violent a big swing has ever looked. Usually it's kind of like a kind of a comedic move. But when you're winding up to slam somebody's head into a metal fence, it's pretty violent.
Darby, do you want me to protect you on the swing? Nope. Okay. Mm-hmm. There were highlights of the Fight Without Honor last week with Ishii pinning Jericho, and Renee speaks with the Learning Tree. And Ishii has made the challenge for Dynamite in 2 weeks' time in Chicago on the Thanksgiving Eve edition. And Jericho mentions their history going back to war when Ishii was a young boy and washing his back in the shower. But then Ishii went on to become one of the greatest wrestlers. And this will be a rematch from almost exactly 2 years ago on the Thanksgiving show from 2022 in Chicago. So he accepts the challenge. And Keith says that Ishii is going to get his ass blown away in the Windy City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gave us some backstory here to this rivalry. They had footage of the match from 2 years ago, which was nice. They did not have footage of the backwashing from decades ago, and I was fine with that. I believed him.
No. Maybe we can get the revival / FTR. Remember that angle with them shaving each other's back in WWE?
Oh, yes. And then we can get Christian with the ass cream.
The ass cream.
Yeah.
All right.
Christian and Jericho.
Right back to Jericho.
That's right.
All right.
Okay.
Classic stuff. Also starting in 2 weeks in Chicago is the Continental Classic, which we know Okada is in, and we will find out if Masahiro Chono will be putting his name into the hat.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Dr. Britt Baker against Penelope Ford. I thought that this was just a real struggle from I would say like three quarters of this. It was just like the crowd was down, but it's not like the work was necessarily engaging them either. Like it was just Ford had the heat forever and it's like, it was fine. There was nothing wrong with it, but there was nothing like jumping out of the screen at you either until
a lot of it was the commercial break style where like, I'm guessing
this felt like they were working through a commercial break. Like,
I'm guessing they're encouraged not to do so much. While they're in picture in picture. Yeah. And unfortunately that was like a bulk of the match. I also think this match was hurt. Like this should have been a bigger deal than it was given that it was Britt Baker's, like, was this her return match?
Well,
she came back for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, she had been out for a few weeks since that illness took her out of the match at like the day of a couple of weeks ago. But I mean, you had just done the big return with her from
that's true.
That it's kind of tough to build up a second
but,
return.
But I was kind of startled. I was a little startled by how cold Baker felt, you know, here.
Yes.
And I think it was it's just because this she's been lacking in like supporting material. We haven't really heard her cut a promo on any of the other shows,
not to build up this match. Like she wasn't on Collision or anything or Dynamite last week.
So I mean,
like this was just announced cold, this match.
She's just kind of felt like not that big of a presence lately.
Well, she comes back with a sling blade and then Ford goes for her matrix into a cutter, but Baker leaned into this too early, and it just wasn't timed well with the cutter. And so Ford misses.
It's too bad because the one with Hayter looks so good, you know. And and I guess this does give you pause about whether or not it could be a regular move given the degree of, I think, difficulty clearly that's required here.
It's tough. If you get the timing, it looks great, but if not, it really stands out like a sore thumb. So there's a moonsault missed by Ford off the top. She takes a spinning neck breaker, and then Baker puts on the glove. But Ford drop kicks her from behind, applies the Muda lock, and that's transitioned into the lockjaw. It was a very good counter sequence at the end, and the lockjaw allows Baker to win in 8 minutes and 56 seconds. And Serena Deeb walks out to, I guess in theory, set up Baker's program. We cut to Baker, who is mouthing repeatedly, "Nobody cares. Nobody cares." It's like, cool. Can't wait to see this one. Nobody cares. And we cut away. That was it. That was your baby face is like, I'm so unimpressed with who is coming to challenge me. Nobody cares.
I think she was talking about her own match. Because nobody cared about it, that either. Nobody really cared about any of this, unfortunately. I don't know. Like maybe there's like somewhere where like has Deep meant like what's going on with Deep? Why does she come out here?
She came out and she was stating from the stage that you can't lace my boots, and Baker is not too intrigued to find out if that's accurate or not. So that's your lead up. Like honestly, this feels like a pre-show match is what it feels like. This should be maybe just reserved for television because this pay-per-view is, we're already 9 matches deep on this show. This is one that, I mean, it's a deep card that I don't know if this one really stands out as necessary on the pay-per-view. Mina Shirakawa is back and she is confronted by Harley Cameron, and Mina's going to be there on Saturday to see Anna Jay and Mariah May in their rubber match. And Harley says, well, since you're there, why not we face off and go tit for tit, rack them up, and may the breast woman win. And then they proceeded to shake their boobs until Renee stopped them. And that was our setup.
I mean, given, I think, Harley Cameron being the type of character that she is, I thought this was a really entertaining segment. You know, Mina, I think, is doing really well in AEW for somebody who's not here every week.
Wait, this was her return. You said Baker, where they should have built it up. This was her return that they had promoted. Mina Shirakawa. We had vignettes about Mina is coming. This was her arrival.
Okay, well, she came back to cut a promo. What's wrong with that?
Okay.
She didn't have to. I'd rather her cut a promo before wrestling than just coming in with a wrestling match. I think Baker should have come back with a bigger promo before having the match she had tonight. I think that would have made a big difference before. But I think overall she's doing so well in AEW for somebody who's not here every week. Somebody who was a relative unknown before she came into AEW, she's one of the most over women on this roster. And I think Harley Cameron continues to like show that she's found a great role for herself in that. She's very creative and very entertaining, even in small roles like this.
Swerve Strickland against Leo Rush was next. And this one, Excalibur noted, was tit for tat early on as Rush backflips off the apron while Swerve flips over to the floor. And we get this face off on the floor. And the crowd got into that. These two worked really well together, doing a lot. Like Leo Rush got a lot in this match. I mean, you knew what the outcome would be, but I think this really helped Leo Rush in the process. Nana just, the one thing, when these crowds are not that big and not that loud, boy, does Prince Nana stand out that much more. Like, he is just so loud. There's a house call on the edge of the apron, and the crowd got into this. Rush catches him with a standing Spanish fly out of nowhere, and then Rush tries to kick off the desk into a Rana. That's blocked, and then he's placed on the steps, leaps backward into a poison Rana onto the floor, and immediately follows with a tope suicida, a great sequence. Final hour gets kicked out from, and then Rush tries to pin him, grabbing the rope, gets caught by Nana, and then a second poison Rana is caught as Swerve's got it scouted and turns it into big pressure, winning in 10 minutes and 3 seconds. I thought a really good match that these two had. And they got the crowd too as well, and that was not a given on this show.
I thought this match was amazing. You know, it felt like a match where like it was the intent of both men, or at least Swerve, to like really raise Leo's stock in defeat. I thought Leo Rush was the star of this match. You know, he's been incredible in almost every single match he's been in since he's returned to AEW, and I think he just continues to show that he's just a top level guy who is very complete in the ring. He's very complete on the microphone, and it seems like he's already like, you know, teasing something away from with MVP's stable here. So I would love to see him join the Hurt Syndicate and develop more of a heelish role. So and he could reunite with Bobby Lashley, of course.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, what a reunion. Maybe he could. Maybe Lashley could also reunite with his sister, Max Caster.
They are flirting with that too. Like he did.
They have teased Max Caster in this whole thing.
The sister did get the business card. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Swerve gets on the microphone and says everyone wants to come at him to prove a point, and says how Benjamin tried to make a name off of his and got laid out, and now he's focused on Bobby Lashley. And then refers to where they are standing right now in Stamford, Connecticut. And man, he didn't even get Connecticut out of his mouth. And the boos that were coming out. This was like the most lively response this crowd had all night. And MVP and Lashley walk out. And MVP is trying to cut a promo as this crowd is chanting, "This is Bridgeport," over top. MVP was a pro. He just powered through. But it was impossible not to hear this crowd just trying to take over. Lashley, MVP was like kind of caught in the middle, like explaining how he's not going to wrestle. But then Lashley started getting ready to fight and said, well, I guess he's ready to fight now. And there's strength in numbers. And the whole thing was MVP and Lashley come out. The announcers are saying, well, where's Shelton Benjamin? And this kind of made Swerve just look foolish here because he gets jumped from behind, which I think everyone saw as where this was going to lead to. So he's beaten down. Lashley joins in. This crowd is chanting for MVP during the beatdown of Swerve. So then MVP starts choking Nana to silence the crowd, or at least get them to boo the action on Nana. And then the now renamed Hurtlock, the full Nelson, is applied onto Swerve. He's left laying, and the segment ends with a loud chant of Bridgeport as Nana is tossed out to the floor. And very subtle, but Leo Rush is still on the floor and is just watching all of this mayhem ensue. So you kind of had that as a background part here. But I mean, this was just, man, you mess up the city and it can really just negatively affect the segment. And I think this one got hampered by that because this audience they were proud of their surroundings.
An unfortunate mistake. Yeah, I've totally derailed this otherwise perfectly fine beatdown.
25 minutes.
I'm sure there are plenty of people from Stanford there, you know.
They were not chanting, or maybe they too. They're like, we don't live in this place. This ain't Stanford. Yeah. Renee speaks with Jamie Hayter, and she is asked what is next. She has come back to right the wrongs, and she is going after one thing. And the lights cut out, and we go to another Julia Hart vignette. The first, which was really a great vignette, aired on Collision, where she's her House of Black self is murdering the former cheerleader Julia Hart. And this was another like really well done vignette where Julia Hart wakes up with blood all over her shirt to a call from Brody King, telling her, "Come home. Malachi Black's at a crossroads in his career. He needs," and states that, well, she opens up a door and is handed her hat and a bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what? She's hunting.
Maybe that'll be her
new finisher.
The bow and arrow, yeah. I don't know if we're supposed to look that deep into it, but yeah, these have been incredibly cool. They're so well produced, and I think these are going to be enough to make her a star on their own. I really do think this is how you promote somebody's return. You know, so often, especially like in the women's division, we just see these like cold comebacks without much fanfare being built up. The AEW has shown that they are capable of properly reintroducing characters that we should be caring about, and this is one of those examples.
Collision on Saturday. It's Mariah May and Anna Jay. If Anna Jay loses, she will never challenge Mariah May again for the title. Johnny TV against Daniel Garcia, Mina Shirakawa and Harley Cameron, tit for tit, and The Acclaimed against Rush and Beast Mortos to determine the fourth team in the tag match at Full Gear. And then Dynamite next week, Orange Cassidy against Wheeler Yuta and Claudio against Darby Allin so far. Main event, Private Party are out to watch Malachi Black and Brody King against FTR. The winners joining Private Party and the Outrunners in the four-way match. And Nigel references Malachi dying on his sword last week and the questions about his future. Malachi better not go back and listen to this.
He should have gone on Instagram.
Black begins throwing kicks, and then Dax swings and misses as Black sits down into the cross-legged position. And they go to the floor, and Cash drills Black, so then Cash and Dax sit down next to Black to pose as they go to picture-in-picture. During the picture-in-picture, Nigel McGuinness got so excited learning that Tony Schiavone got to see the Minnesota Wrecking Crew in the 70s. It was like he perked up. FTR cuts off the ring with Black, but then Black hits a quebrada onto both men, and then King comes in, and he just runs wild. Cannonball to both. There's a lariat powerbomb combo by FTR, and then Black sends Cash into the steps, and they go for the Power and Glory spot onto King, who gets his knees up. Black hits a double stomp, and after Dante's Inferno gets stopped, they hit the Shatter Machine, but Dax gets pulled out of the ring by Black, and we see a FTR comeback. Spike pile driver is delivered to Black on the edge, and then King hits a Tope Suicida, lariat to Dax, and then he applies the sleeper hold, and Dax Harwood loses consciousness. This one went just under 14 minutes, and the House of Black are joining the House of Black and the Outrunners. Two very different tag teams challenging Private Party, and then we'll get the fourth team. And at the end, the four men, they shook hands, and then Malachi Black, he undid his boots. He left them in the center of the ring. There was a spotlight on the boots as we faded to Black, very apropos. And that sets up our tag match because that did not happen.
No, how dare you? How dare you joke about that? Great main event. I thought excellent tag team wrestling in a very stacked division. And a little bit surprised that FTR aren't getting into this four-way. And I wonder if if they're just sort of like putting them in the background while they're trying to bring some fresh blood into this division. And if so, do they have something fresh planned for FTR in the near future? So, yeah, it makes me wonder about it. You know.
I'm not super complaining about this, but if in fact, and I will couch that with the word if, if we are in fact getting MJF and Roderick Strong at this pay-per-view and you're holding off Adam Cole, and our decision was to do one of the rarest losses for Malakai Black when we aren't even going in that direction, and we are building these guys up for a tag title match, like they're, I question House of Black needing to be the stepping stones for an incomplete run that Adam Cole has to go on. That this is a roster that is not lacking in quality opponent. Like Roderick Strong went through Shane Taylor, Beast Mortos, and Lance Archer. I just don't know. Like Malakai Black,
but they just needed big Cole matches for TV, especially going up against an NXT show. I'm guessing that's at least they wanted to do. I think they wanted to do Cole versus
Black. That's a difference maker that you could have mixed and matched many others.
I think it's more attractive than like Cole versus a Beast Mortos to an NXT audience.
Well, you could have many others on this roster.
Yeah, I don't
disagree. 150 people.
But I also argue that I don't necessarily think Malakai Black is somebody you even need to protect. It's not like they're using Malakai Black for important pay-per-view matches. When was the last time he even had a singles match? Like when are they? When they're not even telling single stories with Malakai Black.
Well, I mean, you're building him up for this tag title match. He was headlining the following week's show.
The following week's? You mean this for a tag title match though? Like, I don't even think of him as this like very like big entity in the singles division because he hasn't really felt like one at all ever. Like he's never talked about aspirations for going for any sort of championship. So I don't even think he's somebody who needs to be protected. Whether or not that's up to the company is I guess another question too.
Well, that was that is where we are at the end.
So you want to go through Full Gear so far?
So here is the updated lineup with John Moxley against Orange Cassidy for the AEW championship. Will Ospreay against Kyle Fletcher. Jack Perry against Daniel Garcia for the TNT title. Bobby Lashley and Swerve Strickland. Very big match for Bobby Lashley. And I would argue that I think Lashley has to win this first one coming in to establish himself. Mercedes Moné and Chris Statlander for the TBS championship. I'm actually very high on the match. I've not been high on the angles leading into it, but I think I just think a Statlander pay-per-view match is pretty guaranteed, I think, to be pretty strong. And then we have the four-way tag match we were just discussing with the fourth team coming out of Collision. Jay White against Hangman Page. MJF against Roderick Strong. We presume Konosuke Takeshita and Ricochet. They've all but confirmed that. And the official main event, Big Boom AJ with Big Justice taking on QT Marshall on the Countdown show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is looking like an awesome lineup. I just don't think that this... I think when people sit down and look at this lineup, like this is, I think, a really well built up.
How many pay-per-views do you think it'll sell?
I think that it is going to be in the neighborhood of, like, I don't see this one being a giant one. I would say like the 120 range would be kind of what I would be. This one's really going to tell you like the Death Rider angle. And if it's, like, that is the one hang-up I can see a lot of people having is, like, is Orange Cassidy, have they convinced you that this is a, does this feel more than just the first major title defense by Jon Moxley on a pay-per-view versus someone that's a viable challenger that can, whether this goes on last, and I think it probably will, like, can an Orange Cassidy headline in a challenger position? A lot of this is on that particular match because, the rest of the show, like all of it looks very, very strong, which you're going to get for these AEW shows. But it's really how much that main event connects on, people wanting to buy this and how many times you're reminded on the show to buy the pay-per-view.
I think Fletcher and Ospreay has been the best built feud of these so far, including, I mean, Moxley has been doing a great job on his own, but I don't necessarily feel like it's the all-encompassing sort of like company takeover that I think it's promised to be. And Orange Cassidy, to me, despite like making great strides as a series promo, still feels like a pretty lame duck challenger in my opinion. But I think Fletcher and Ospreay has just been like really strong storytelling with some great performances from the both of them, especially from Kyle Fletcher, who I think it continues to just show just he's evolving and he's ready for that next level.
All right, we're going to head it over to Forum postwrestling.com to take your feedback and discuss tonight's Dynamite if you want to kick things off way.
Okay, let's go up first to Benjamin, who says, it didn't feel like the crowd had they had was very lively. At times I heard some OTC chants. Did they do that?
I didn't hear those. It's possible. I mean, it was not the most lively crowd. It's kind of the what we talk about most weeks. But yeah, definitely, I would say like they really got into the end of Leo Rush and Swerve. That felt like it. And the end of like Takeshita Adam Cole. It was like the audience when they were engaged, like they it wasn't like they weren't reacting at all. But it was a crowd that you had to work for to get them going. And it was 2,700 people. Like that's kind of what you're going to be dealing with.
He says, I found the Hurt Syndicate and Swerve post-match segments way too predictable, especially after you had Ospreay countering the same trope earlier in the show. I like Julia Hart videos, but would prefer a character with less spooky gaga, since we know it's going to lead into a light-off, then on reappearing Julia trick. I'll repeat what I said last week. More Malakai Black singles matches and programs. Brody can handle his own in singles programs, so can Buddy. What exactly are the active women's storylines? Because it all feels scattered and incongruent.
I mean, it's Mercedes and Chris Statlander at the moment, and Mariah May with, you know, whatever they're going to do coming out of this Anna Jay match with Mina Shirakawa and ultimately getting to Toni Storm. That obviously doesn't feel like it's going to be within this pay-per-view cycle. But that's... Yeah.
And they're building something up between Deeb and Baker.
Yeah, but nobody cares, I was told. Brian from New Jersey. Monet versus Statlander, Mariah May... Oh, okay, sorry. He's responding to the last one. My big highlights were that Ospreay and were the Ospreay-Fletcher promo segment, Swerve and Leo Rush, and the tag main event. The doubters got silenced for now as Malakai Black and Brody King are full gear bound, challenging for the tag team titles and sharing the ring with the Outrunners. I thought Ospreay and Fletcher did very well. I also liked the more chaotic elements of the Death Riders segment. Moxie didn't seize the Superstation, but Darby nearly seized their truck before Claudio took them for a swing. The crowd was right to call out Swerve for his mistake in calling their city Stanford. Since he's not on the pay-per-view for now, maybe Adam Cole could take the day off and get a more natural tan and ditch the terrible spray tan he's using now.
I didn't notice. Yeah, well, didn't really bother me. But maybe it could. Yeah. Let's go to Andrew from Cape Breton, who says, I love the pacing on the show tonight with segments bleeding into each other. Most of the matches are great, but I felt the Baker Ford match slowed the show down a bit. Will Ospreay is a great promo and will probably be seen as one of the best this year. He needs to help Mark Davis with a wardrobe though. Shawn Michaels would tell him to try and dress better for TV. The Julia Hart segment was a bit unrealistic. She's way too young to have a rotary phone. Well, this was a dream sequence of sorts, okay? Or it was happening in like a nether realm. So they have rotary phones still down there. It's also a shame Swerve messed up the name of the town as he basically heard his own segment. Mox's angle is progressing nicely, and it's also nice to see more than one match scheduled for Collision.
All right, we go to Cody from Maine. All right, this is like an Observer Hall of Fame question. Okay, he's asking about the regions that I abstain from voting on. Is that something you see changing? So anyway, I did a show the other day going through my Observer ballot, and of the different sections, the ones that I don't vote on is Mexico and then the Europe / rest of the world. And those are just ones that, I mean, I have decent knowledge of, but not to the depth of like the historical candidates, the modern Japan, and therefore I just abstain from them. It's like I would feel comfortable voting for some acts, but not the entire field, and therefore I just leave it out at that point. Maybe in the future, but right now I don't vote in those sections.
So the issue comes out tomorrow, right?
I think it's this week, yes. So people will know, I guess, Thursday or Friday when the issue comes out, who's in this year.
All right. And just to remind people who are, I guess, the top names that are being eligible, that are eligible this year.
I mean, in the modern category, I guess the big ones this year are Roman Reigns, the Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes. I think those are all ones that are going to get a lot of support. Young Bucks were very close last year, but didn't get in. I would think that this year they crossed that threshold, but we'll see. Those are probably the big ones. I've seen a lot of support for Bobby Davis in the non-wrestler category. I would think those are some of the favorites off the top of my head. The modern one is interesting because there's a lot of candidates piled into that specific section. And I mean, I'll ask you, if you had one vote to give between the Bucks, Cody, Roman Reigns, CM Punk also in that discussion, I mean, is there one that stands above the rest of those four candidates that you would feel has a better case than the others?
I again, you have to remind me on what the qualifications are for the Observer Hall of Fame.
I mean, it's historical significance, it's drawing power, like match quality is in there, but it's mm-hmm. not the be all end all. So I mean, you're looking at most
to what
of
degree
all,
though, because you could say yes for all of them.
Well, I think many would. I was just asking you if you feel like there's one particular favorite of those, if you were looking at, or you could see all of them getting in.
I could see all of, well, I mean, according to me, but I don't know what
Punk is a tough one. Punk is a yes for me. He's a yes for a lot of people.
Why would he? What are the arguments? We've had this conversation, but what are the arguments against?
I think a lot of people look at the exit from AEW as a real bad mark on him. Not so much just the way it ended, but ultimately, like, what he left in his wake at AEW. And I think that, rightly or wrongly, that I think a lot of the downturn for AEW is left on Punk's exit from the company, and that being a big negative. I mean, that's not disqualifying for me. But
yeah,
why
would it be? Is Shawn Michaels in?
Shawn Michaels is in. I mean,
and
your
he had a really negative first half of his career, you could argue.
I think that there's I think that Shawn Michaels is a good comparison point to Punk. I think that Shawn was very detrimental at various points throughout the 90s when it
like,
came
like
to
is
business.
Is conduct even like supposed to be a you know something that you're grading somebody on for a Hall
I'm
of
not
Fame career?
I'm not voting on people's character or you know things that might happen that they're not great people, like that's not affecting it. Where you get into the area is like your conduct having an impact on business and hurting like your company, hurting the industry itself. Like if you want to look at someone enhancing business as a check mark on your resume, then the opposite is going to be held against you by some. To me, it's just too strong of an argument for Punk when it comes to the influence he has had as being this really transformative character when it comes to the last 20 years of professional wrestling. And I think there's just been too many different eras that he has been at the forefront of that have been major injections of outside interest in professional wrestling. And I mean, that was from the Money in the Bank promo and run that 2011 had, the return in AEW. I mean, even if you want to talk about like that podcast he did is probably the most famous wrestling podcast that has ever dropped. Like he has been this lightning rod that has just struck so much fandom among people, and some of it positive and some of it negative. And that return to AEW was enormous, I think, for his legacy on top of it. And he's come back, and it's been a year that he has been a big positive for WWE on top of it. But that's he hasn't got in prior, and I voted for him many years and he hasn't gotten in.
So John did release a podcast for the Post Wrestling Cafe available to all patrons talking about his particular Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot for this year. So those of you that are cafe patrons, check it out now.
All right.
Last piece of feedback. Do you want to go to it?
We go to Matthew. AEW has done a great job of investing in their characters and really building programs over the last several weeks. Full Gear is a loaded up show. There's continuity and progression in the stories and a new focus on promoting upcoming shows, which is a welcome change. History has taught us that they won't smell the fruits of their labor overnight, but if they keep up the consistency, all it takes is one program to get super hot and boost business. Is this an indictment of Jimmy Jacobs since things have really changed since he left? I don't think it's a fair Jimmy Jacobs was not running shop in AEW, and I think that's a convenient exit from the company.
We
that
know
are
like
sign.
5% of actually what, like who's in charge of these things. And like we get these stories like Jimmy Jacobs has left and we just kind of expand so much more meaning out of something like that. Don't do that. We don't need to. Last piece of feedback goes to Annie. My first time watching Dynamite Live in a few months, I quite enjoyed the Ospreay Fletcher promo segment and Swerve versus Leo Rush. Thoroughly enjoying the presentation of the Hurt Syndicate. They feel like the coolest guys on the planet. I also thought Adam Cole had his best outing since returning from injury. However, I'm not a fan of the main event angle. The promo segment featured another babyface talking about how the belt represents what AEW can and should be. I personally find these spirit of the promotion storylines uninspired at this point. In addition to finding the premise banal, they keep talking about shaping the company, but too many things on the show feel untouched by this angle for me to buy the promos. It's very tell, don't show, and shallow for me. I don't disagree. I think they are lacking something that makes this angle feel bigger than what it currently is. We haven't heard much of the main top of this roster acknowledge it. It just kind of feels like it's the Death Riders versus like the Dark Order, the conglomeration. I might be missing a few others, but it if they're trying to convince people that this is some sort of major takeover, Mox should be attacking everybody. Death Rider should be attacking everybody up and down the card, heel and baby faces. Everybody should be pledging their either allegiance for or against this new group.
Yeah, I think it's also one where I think it's tough when you understand the realities of where AEW is and your top heel is arguing that this company needs a reboot. We need to change things up. We need to get back to where things were. And I mean, if you break down what the arguments are that has been laid out by John Moxley, I think a lot of fans subscribe to that overall thinking. And it's not as though you're getting these baby faces that are standing up for AEW in the way of defending. It's tough because if you have an Orange Cassidy out there arguing how AEW is great and perfect, I think this audience, there's pushback to that because I think like this is an in-tune audience that would not take that as it's the heel that sounds more authentic than the babyface if you're to present that. But if you don't present that argument, it's almost as though like you're telling your audience that, yeah, we're in a slump and that is kind of the acknowledgement on screen, which is a tough perception deal.
Well, I think Orange and all the baby faces should acknowledge that AEW is imperfect and the way things are might not be the most ideal, but the way Moxley and the Death Riders are going up about it is the wrong way. You know, these people are salvageable. You know, these people that Moxley considers that, you know, like should be discarded entirely. They're salvageable. We can redeem everybody. Whereas John Moxley is Thanos, okay, and he wants to kill half the universe to start anew, and you know, now you have the Avengers who are trying to argue otherwise. You know,
they need a mission statement though that is something that the audience resists and does not want their imprint on this promotion, like whether it's we are going to take your favorite wrestlers away because they're not our idea of pro wrestling. And if you can direct that to going after a Will Ospreay, that the audience craves a Will Ospreay, but I think you break it down right now, I don't think you've struck that chord with the audience that
these are just kind of like
Moxley's vision of wrestling is probably in sync with a lot of like the fans' complaints as well, and that becomes a tough deal. You need to have a adversarial MO from this Death Rider group that you want to rally around your babyface contingent.
I would also argue, John, that like I don't even think the philosophy of like what the Death Riders want has even been explained to that degree yet. You know, we're having to make up a lot of that meaning. Like thus far, a lot of these beatdowns just kind of feel like, oh, they're just really violent people looking to like take people out.
Yeah.
Moxley continues to say that this is for the greater good, but I think he and also like the baby faces that they're facing could benefit from being a little bit more specific about exactly what their aims are. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like a lot of people might like at this point sympathize with what the Death Riders are saying more so than like what an Orange Cassidy is trying to protect. So hopefully that's something they can address.
All right, we're going to sign off. So thanks to everyone for tuning in to Rewind to Dynamite. We're back Thursday with the Death Warrior review dropping at postwrestlingcafe.com. Lots of great stuff to grab at the cafe. I've got my Observer Hall of Fame ballot breakdown that's already up there. Rewind away. Rewind to SmackDown, Collision, and then we'll have coverage of Historic Crossover 2 this Sunday with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord. And free show Sunday morning, I will be reviewing UFC 309 with Eric Marcotte as John Jones, Stipe Miocic will be fighting at Madison Square Garden. So a lot of great stuff to check out, and the NWA podcast coming up on Sunday night. So check out all of that, postwrestling.com and Post Wrestling on Blue Sky. Good night.